The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. If you, like so many of us, have ever felt a bit exhausted by the endless stream of gurus promising some kind of five-step formula for leadership.
The one that makes you instantly charismatic and decisive.
Exactly. Then this deep dive is, well, it's definitely for you. We are tearing into a book that really aims to debunk all of that.
We are. And it's such a vital one. We're diving into Keith Grint's work, Leadership. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't just offer an alternative viewpoint. It completely challenges the basic assumption that leadership is all about the person at the top.
The hook here is pretty revolutionary, isn't it? Grint argues that leadership isn't about, you know, innate traits or charisma or even your job title.
No.
It's fundamentally about diagnosing the challenge you're facing.
That is the absolute core of it. Leadership, he says, is a social thing. It only emerges as a response to specific types of problems. It's about socially constructing meaning.
Socially constructing meaning. So getting everyone to agree, not just on the solution, but on what the problem is in the first place.
That's it. And that matters so much right now. We live in this era of just incredible complexity, you know, pandemics, climate change, toxic corporate culture.
Right.
And we have this catastrophic habit of misdiagnosing them. We treat these massive, complex challenges as if they were simple issues you could fix with a checklist.
Or a single top-down command.
Exactly. And Grint shows us that this failure to diagnose correctly is the root cause of so many failures. You pick the wrong strategy for the problem, you've already lost.
So to really get our heads around this, we should probably talk about the thinker behind it.
Yeah, let's meet Keith Grint. He's a professor of leadership at Warwick Business School, but calling him just an academic doesn't really do him justice.
Right. His perspective is unique because he blends this really rigorous academic theory with very high-stakes practical experience.
He has a PhD in sociology, so he's looking at power dynamics, social processes.
Mm-hmm. But he also served as an officer in the Royal Marines, and he worked in industry. That's a pretty potent combination.
It really is. That blend of a sociologist looking at context and power with the hands-on experience of commanding people under pressure, it gives him this incredibly non-romanticized view of how groups actually work.
So he's not a psychologist trying to find the perfect leader personality.
Not at all. He's a critical sociologist. He's interested in challenging that myth we all know.
The heroic savior. The one person who steps in and just fixes everything by themselves.
That's the one. He wants to dismantle it.
Which is a perfect segue into the book itself. His main goal is to guide you to a more sophisticated, more nuanced understanding of influence.
Right. To get away from those simplistic formulas and trait lists that you see everywhere.
He starts by just sort of clearing the ground, showing how all the traditional theories just fall short.
For decades, the focus was on two really inadequate models.
The first one is just confusing leadership as position with actual leadership.
Right. Just because you're the CEO or the general, that gives you authority. But it doesn't mean people will follow you when things get messy or ambiguous.
Authority comes from the system, but leadership has to be earned.
And the second big failure is that myth of leadership as person, the great man theory.
The idea that there's just a set list of traits, charisma, intelligence.
Right. And researchers spent decades trying to find a consistent list that applied to all successful leaders in all situations.
And what did they find?
Well, they failed.
Yeah.
Spectacularly. They found weak correlations at best that were totally dependent on the context.
So a brilliant military commander might be a terrible university president.
Exactly. The moment they proved that context was the most important variable, the whole search for a universal leader trait just became obsolete.
So by tearing down that idea of the hero, Grint shifts the whole debate. It's no longer about who the leader is.
It's about the context, mm-hmm. the social dynamics, and most importantly, the nature of the problem you're facing.
That's the real engine of the book, isn't it?
It is. This framework of his, separating challenges into three distinct types. If you can get your head around this diagnostic tool, you instantly become a more effective thinker.
Before we get to that taxonomy, he also has a pretty sharp critique of the more modern theories, right? Like transformational or charismatic leadership.
Oh, absolutely. He sees these as deeply flawed, too. He's particularly wary of what he calls the dark side of charisma.
What does he mean by that?
Well, charisma can create this incredible dependency among followers. The whole organization starts to rely on the leader's supposed genius.
And that's dangerous.
It's incredibly dangerous. It puts this superhero-like burden on one person setting them up for a massive fall. And it disempowers everyone else.
So when that charismatic leader eventually leaves, or just fails,
the whole thing can crumble, because no collective capacity was ever built.
Which brings us right to chapter 3, the heart of the book.
The problem taxonomy. This really is Grint's greatest contribution. Let's break down these three problem types.
Okay, first up, tame problems.
These are basically technical issues. They have a clear definition. There's a known process to solve them. The solution is knowable, even if it's difficult.
An analogy would be like an accountant filing taxes.
Perfect. Or a surgeon performing a routine knee operation. Or an engineer building a bridge from a blueprint. You know the steps.
And so the response required for a tame problem is management.
Exactly. Planning, efficiency, optimization. You manage the process.
Okay, next up, critical problems.
These are crises. Immediate danger, very little time to act, and you're pretty certain about what the threat is.
You don't have time for a 2-hour meeting.
No. The required response here is command. Decisive, unilateral action. A patient is having a heart attack, a building is on fire.
Yeah.
You need someone to take charge. Now,
you command survival.
You do. And then there's the third category, the one that requires actual leadership.
Wicked problems.
Yes. These are the complex, ambiguous ones. There's no obvious answer. The problem itself is hard to define, and every solution you try seems to create new problems. There's no clear we're done moment.
So things like systemic poverty, climate change, or maybe merging two really different corporate cultures.
Those are classic examples. And for these wicked problems, the required response is leadership.
And leadership, in his view, is about mobilizing people to face that uncertainty together.
It is. It's about humility, asking the right questions, collaboration, and experimenting collectively because, you know, the map hasn't been drawn yet.
And the huge failure point he identifies is when we mix these up.
That's the whole thing. Treating a wicked problem, like, say, reforming a broken education system, as if it were a tame problem.
By just applying a new checklist or a technical fix.
It's a guaranteed path to burnout and total futility.
Okay, but let me challenge that for a second. In a big organization, doesn't the CEO sometimes have to treat a wicked problem as if it were tame just to get some momentum going? If you admit how complex it all is, won't everyone just freeze?
That's a great question, and it leads right into the sociological core of the book. Grint would say you might need moments of management or command within the process, but the overall frame has to be one of leadership. And this is where he talks about the social construction of it all.
Leadership is relational. It's about how the group understands reality.
Precisely. He insists that followers are active agents. They aren't passive sheep. He has this great line.
What is it?
Leaders don't have followers. Followers have leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Authority is granted by followers. It's not something a leader just possesses. If your team stops seeing you as legitimate, you stop being a leader, no matter what your business card says.
So leadership is something we attribute to someone, based on their ability to help the group make sense of a tough situation.
That's it. Which means rhetoric, storytelling, framing the situation, those skills become incredibly important.
The leader's job is often to manage the emotional experience of uncertainty, to convince people that sticking with the ambiguity is worth it.
Absolutely. It's sense making.
Okay, so let's distill this down. What are the key things here? The big aha moments?
I think the first one has to be the inadequacy of universal models. If context is king, then there are no universal leadership principles.
So leadership development shouldn't be about mastering one style.
No, it should be about developing your diagnostic ability, your adaptability.
My favorite takeaway, I think, is the primacy of problem construction. It completely changes the job description.
How so?
Well, the leader's most important job isn't coming up with brilliant solutions. It's defining what the problem is in the first place. You have to convince people that the status quo isn't working.
And that the ambiguity is worth wading into.
Right.
Which leads to another point, the limitations of leadership. It's a reality check.
Right. Grint reminds us that any leader is constrained by their followers, by the culture, by the system.
Which should promote a bit of humility. It can curb the hubris that leads to so many disastrous unilateral decisions.
And that ties right into the last theme, the ethical burden.
Mm-hmm. Because leaders shape reality through how they frame things. They decide what gets attention. They have this immense moral responsibility.
Especially with a wicked problem, where you're always making value-based trade-offs.
Yes. And the leader has to be transparent about those trade-offs.
He really does have a way of crystallizing these big ideas into sharp, memorable lines.
He does. Let's talk about a few of those.
Okay, the first one has to be that diagnostic key. Wicked problems require leadership. Tame problems need management. Critical problems demand command.
That quote alone is so useful. It's a tool. The next time you're facing a challenge at work, just stop. Before you rush to an answer, classify the problem.
Are you trying to manage a crisis? Or are you trying to command a cultural shift?
Right. If you are, you're already on the wrong track.
Here's another one that I think really gets to the heart of it. The art of leadership is as much about constructing the problem as it is about solving it.
I love that one. It means the leader often needs to be the person asking the hardest questions, the ones that don't have easy answers.
Which is terrifying for a lot of people in authority. They feel like they have to project certainty all the time.
Yeah, it's about having the courage to invite some shared confusion before you can find a shared solution.
And one more on the non-heroic side of things. Leadership is not what leaders do. It is what followers and leaders achieve together.
So liberating. It just removes that impossible burden of having to be the perfect individual. It reminds you leadership is a group achievement, not some magical quality you either have or you don't.
Okay, let's make this really practical. How do we apply this tame, critical, wicked tool starting tomorrow?
Well, organizationally, it's huge. It helps managers see where effort is being wasted. You can stop applying tame fixes like a new software update to a wicked problem, like, say, chronic turf wars between departments.
So you have to step back, admit you don't have the answer, and shift into leadership mode.
Yes. You involve people in the messy process of just figuring it out together.
And as citizens, this makes us much smarter consumers of news, of political talk.
Oh, absolutely. When you see a political figure offering a simple, tame solution, a catchy slogan for a clearly wicked problem like healthcare reform,
that's a huge red flag.
It is. It gives us permission to demand honesty about the complexity instead of just accepting false certainty.
You can even apply it on a personal level, right?
Totally. Realizing that a deep personal question like, what should I do with my career? Or how do I fix this broken family relationship? That's a wicked problem.
So stop searching for one single immediate answer.
Exactly. Embrace it as a process of inquiry, of experimentation. You have to lead yourself through the uncertainty.
You know, that's really the biggest takeaway for me. It's this profound shift it encourages. We need to stop searching for heroic leaders and start building our collective capacity for leadership in our teams, in our communities. It sort of democratizes the whole thing.
For me, the lasting insight is just the liberating power of the framework itself, that tame, critical, wicked tool. It's simple, but so profound. It empowers anyone, regardless of their title, to cut through the noise and choose the right strategy.
It moves leadership from being this mystical art for a chosen few
to a necessary skill of social diagnosis for everyone.
Grint's work, in the end, it demystifies leadership by showing us its true function. It's the courageous collective act of facing hard questions together.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.